runs. The corporate owner of the Chicago Cubs is considering having the team file for bankruptcy protection. People knowledgeable about the process say the move would hasten the club's long-awaited sale by cleaning up its books. Tribune Company, which itself filed for bankruptcy protection in December, intends for the Cubs' own stay in Chapter 11 to last just a day or two. Two people familiar with the process described it to the Associated Press on condition of anonymity today because the bankruptcy plans are not yet public. This is a day of rest at the Tour de France. When racing resumes tomorrow, Lance Armstrong will be 8 seconds back of the leader. And Steve Stricker has followed one of his best performances with 36 solid holes to win the John Deere Classic by 3 strokes in Silvas. Stricker finished yesterday at 264 for the tournament to earn his second PGA Tour win this year and 6th in all. That's sports.
California character Charles Phoenix loves all things old and overlooked.
I saw this building from the 20s. Well, it's shaped like a tamale.
He gives us a history lesson in California kitsch.
I want to encourage people to be tourists in their own towns.
An unusual tour of downtown LA launches our new summer series, California Characters, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.
And WILL will bring you NPR's daily wrap-up of the Sotomayor confirmation hearings each evening at 10 on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. And of course, we'll keep you updated throughout the day on our news programs, including All Things Considered and The World. You can also watch the News Hour's live coverage of the hearings during the day on WILL TV's digital channel 12.2, The World. It's 2:42. Michael Kaiser blushes when you ask if he is a savior, but the president of the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., is a missionary for the arts. Tomorrow, he launches a 50-state tour to help arts organizations weather the economic crisis. In New York, then Kalamazoo, Indianapolis, Nashville, Charlotte, and more, Kaiser will meet with arts groups to discuss survival strategies. NPR special correspondent Susan Stamberg caught Mr. Kaiser before he left Washington.
Known as the turnaround king for reviving critically ill arts groups, Michael Kaiser admits he has, on occasion, been wrong.
I told 3M that Post-its would never sell.
I did. Well, 3M doesn't sing or dance. Before he came to the Kennedy Center in 2001, arts manager Michael Kaiser raised money, erased deficits, injected life into the flailing Kansas City Ballet, the Alvin Ailey Dance Theater, the American Ballet Theater, London's Royal Opera House. He says when times are tough, most organizations, arts and otherwise, suffer from bunker mentality.
They cut more and they cut more and they cut more. They think they're going to save their way to health, and they end up getting very, very, very sick.
Instead of eliminating seasons or performances or an opera, Michael Kaiser says arts groups need to think fresher, smarter, and more creatively. It's the only way they can stay in business.
When there is less money to be given, you have to compete harder for it, not less hard.
Yeah, but that's not, but be realistic. You've got to pay the salaries if you're going to do 23 performances in a season. Mm-hmm. That's 100 musicians times 23 times the heating, the lighting, all of that. So why not cut back to 19?
Because as you go down the slippery slope, you start to look like a bad competitor for the funds that are being given.
Collaborate, says Kaiser. In 1997, the American Ballet Theater and the San Francisco Ballet co-produced Othello. They announced it 3 years in advance, which gave them time to raise the money, and by collaborating, they cut their costs in half. Meanwhile, people got excited, began talking about it, anticipating the new work. So, another lesson, do new things, adventurous things, not just the old chestnuts.
Don't say, we're going to get boring, we're going to get so accessible, we're going to start looking like everybody else, and then we have nothing to claim as our own. We have no reason to be receiving funding. If you listen to the pundits, they'll say, just do La Boheme, and I think that's a big mistake.
More advice, be creative, do more for less. Last year, with a special grant, the Kennedy Center put on all of August Wilson's plays. Sounds expensive.
But we did staged readings. We did them with limited costumes and sets. We did it with limited props. We brought the best actors together for a month. It was an astonishing month where we saw the entire 20th century through August Wilson's eyes. For the first time, all of his 10 plays were done in order. Yet it wasn't a very expensive project.
And box office was good for the run of the plays. But arts organizations can't rely just on ticket sales. They need funders, too, big ones. Contributions to the arts were down 6% last year, a lot, but not devastating, Michael Kaiser says. There is still plenty of money out there for the arts, but arts groups have to be smarter about snaring it. So, collaborate to cut costs, rethink some basics, market online, not in expensive print ads, for instance, and realize that when you cut programming, you cut your revenue source and your ambitions. The Kaiser Council.
I do believe that sometimes it takes these terrible, difficult environments to allow us to be more creative rather than less creative.
Starting tomorrow, the Kennedy Center's president, Michael Kaiser, will take his beliefs on tour, a national campaign to help arts organizations in 50 states to survive in a not-so-healthy economic environment. For those who believe that arts will save the world, it's a most welcome journey. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News.
You might not have heard of the design firm Pentagram, but more than likely, you've seen its work. Pentagram designed the shopping bags for Saks Fifth Avenue, the logo for Citibank, the layout of the New York Times Magazine. In short, its designers make things look pretty. Recently, Pentagram got a call from the not-for-profit Nature Conservancy. As Hamed Ahmed reports, it wasn't the usual request for a nice new logo or packaging.
The Nature Conservancy wanted Pentagram to issue a challenge to big-name designers. And the challenge was this: design environmentally friendly stuff. In other words, you have to use renewable, abundant, and natural materials instead of plastic. Well, Pentagram stepped up to the challenge, recruited some designers, and now I'm here to see what they came up with. Curator Abbott Miller and I are standing at the Smithsonian Design Museum in Manhattan.
The exhibition actually goes this way.
Okay. The exhibition is called Design for a Living World, and honestly, it kind of looks like a pottery barn. Bowls, chairs, rugs. When you look closely, though, you see that all this stuff is made from really interesting materials. For example, salmon leather.
Salmon leather is stripped away from salmon in the process of canning and literally was considered waste, but is actually an incredible material.
So this is just like salmon scales.
It's the skin of salmon that's been preserved.
Working with the salmon leather fell upon big-name fashion designer Isaac Mizrahi, who's more used to working with silk and satin.
If you're weighing like sort of what, like, you know, ecology and glamour, I think they weigh the same to me. You know, I'm sorry to say that.
Ecology or glamour, huh? Well, Mizrahi took the salmon leather. And what did he make out of it? A dazzling pair of high heels, the kind you'd see on a red carpet.
For some people, that kind of product represents a negative for them.
Gary Bamosi is a marketing professor at Georgetown's business school.
These very expensive green items that are really just sort of fashionista kinds of acquisitions, and they see that as frivolous and maybe even as a waste of money.
So not exactly a green ethic. And this makes me wonder which way of being green is better, buying more shoes made from salmon leather or not buying more shoes at all. Abbott Miller admits it's a valid question.
That whole question of, you know, should we buy less, I think the answer is probably yes. You know, everyone knows that we're an over-consuming culture.
So if the real problem is overconsumption, what's the point of green design? When I ask Gary Bamosi, the marketing professor, he comes back at me with another question.
Green design as it relates to museums and as fashion, or green design as a part of a business model process?
And that question makes me realize green design isn't just a new look for the same product. It's a new way of making those products and educating the consumer. Abbott Miller says we really ought to know more about what we buy and what's used to make it.
We may come to a point of such hyper-awareness of the materials that we use that that's part of the story of why you buy something.
Miller and Bomosi agree that buyers increasingly want to know more, and that could lead to products being more sustainable. But the thing is, all this awareness isn't free. So you're left with one last question. Are you willing to pay more for knowing more about the things you buy? For the Environment Report, I'm Hamad Ahmed.
If you're heading on vacation this summer, you can document the whole trip on a video camera that's small enough to fit in your pocket. NPR's Steve Inskeep got a demonstration from technology guru Mario Armstrong.
Mario, this time you brought maybe half a dozen devices. Most of them look not much larger than a cell phone. In fact, one of them here looks more like a large cigarette lighter, old-style cigarette lighter.
Yeah, I mean, about the size of maybe a pack of cigarettes or a deck of cards. These are actual video capture devices nowadays that have become so popular because of their size and being this small.
And how much memory do they have? Can I put hours of video on one of these small things in your hand here?
Yeah, some of them, you know, range because of how they actually shoot the video or how they actually function, rather. The Flip Minnow brand, they typically have a built-in hard drive, which is done in hours. So you can shoot for 2 hours before you need to make room. But on other devices, like the Kodak ZX1 that I'm holding here, allows you to plug in a SD card, just like you do for digital cameras.
Oh, okay.
And so the more memory you have on your card, the more you can continue going on and shooting.
Now, this one looks a little bit more like a cell phone. It's even got a little keypad on there and so forth.
And it's more ruggedized, too. That's one thing I'll let you hold it to, and you'll probably feel a little bit of the difference between those two devices.
Oh, the Kodak is a little heftier.
A little heftier.
Throw this across the room.
Throw it across the room, a little bit weatherproof.
Do you mind if I do that now?
No, I don't mind if you do that.
Okay, well, anyway, I'll do it later.
But no, but that's some of the thing. You know, we're talking about ease of use and simplicity. So you can put them in your jeans pocket or you could put them in your purse. So they need to be a little bit more durable to be banged up. But the ZX1 has kind of taken it to another level now by being more weatherproof. So I think it's great for a beach or pool activities or if kids want to use it and it drops, you're not worrying about it.
I understand you've taken some video with one of these devices before you came.
Yeah, let's fire that up. I shot some video on both the Kodak ZX1 and the Flip Ultra HD, and here we are.
So here we are at National Public Radio headquarters.
This is Mario talking.
And, headed on the way inside.
Doesn't sound great.
To go and see Steve Inskeep with Morning Edition. And,
you're shooting yourself. This is classic. You're going to post this on YouTube when we're done?
Possibly.
Okay, so we've got a crisp picture. Looks good in the sunlight anyway. It looks really good. I'm sure that looks great, actually, even on a wider screen. So what do we compare that to?
So we compare that to the Kodak ZX1. Let me turn that one on for you.
635 Massachusetts Avenue. I'm Mario Armstrong, and we're headed in to go see Steve Inskeep with Morning Edition. And
okay, so that's
a
there we go. All right, that also looks pretty good. A little more film-like, actually, in terms of the color quality. So which one of these, compare and contrast these two.
You know, both of them are really, really strong. I like the Ultra HD, the Flip Minnow's ability to grab a wide shot. The ZX1 feels a little bit more comfortable in my hand, and I like the fact that it's more ruggedized. But from a quality video perspective, both of them really seem to shoot almost on par with each other. As you mentioned, though, the ZX1 does have that little bit of a film feel to it,
Yeah. Which
is a little bit more exciting and makes it seem like it's a little bit more quality.
So maybe the ZX1 is what I'd go for if I wanted to be a little more of a documentary filmmaker, but if I just want something that is really easy to use, it's hard to beat this Ultra HD, which hardly has any buttons on it.
That's right.
You've brought along what I guess this is called a palm camera here. It's got a little strap that goes around it, fits in your palm, and it had the screen that flips out. This
That's right.
looks more recognizably like a video camera, even though this is very small compared to what was available
compared
10 years
to,
ago.
10 years ago when you had to have something on your shoulder, leaning on your shoulder and strapped. This is a palm quarter, so you're right, it has a strap on it. It does have that flip-out screen, and you're used to seeing tourists and more families carrying those, but that's changing now. That's what this whole new shift is about. But back then, you're looking at tapes was how those devices recorded. So
these
you're holding
digital videotapes here. Yeah.
That's right, a little mini DV tape. And so what the problem was, a twofold issue there. One is you had to have tapes, number one. Number two, to then share that video
yes.
once it was captured, You then would have to convert that tape into some digital format, and you would have to do that in real time.
Okay, so how much does one of these new, smaller video cameras cost me, video capture devices cost me, yeah, as opposed to an older palm camera?
Anywhere from $99 to about $249, still well shy of professional units that would start more around $500 or $600.
Mario Armstrong, always good when you come by.
Thanks, Steve. Pleasure being here.
That was Morning Edition Steve Inskeep talking with Mario Armstrong, host of Digital Cafe on Baltimore Public Radio's WYPR.
Got an iPod or any other MP3 player? Well, you can take the latest AM580 newscast and feature reporting with you. Go to will.illinois.edu/news and subscribe to and download AM580's podcasts. You can choose to have the last AM580 newscast on demand, or choose to hear our in-depth features as they come in. Thorough, accurate news when you want it. Download our podcasts at will.illinois.edu/news.
Coming up today on The World at 3 o'clock, a singer from Cameroon found musical success in Paris. He saved his career, and he may be helping to save the language of his people. A Cameroonian in Paris, that story in the day's news. Coming up today on The World, the program gets underway here on AM 580 at 3 o'clock. What most people know about California are the clichés: earthquakes, wildfires, sunshine, and movie stars. As a native son, journalist Mark Erics has a deeper and more complex view of the nation's most confounding state, finding a place that can be both tragic and full of promise. Next time on our morning show, Focus 580, we'll talk about the essays in his book, West of the West: Dreamers, Believers, Builders, and Killers in the Golden State. Mark Erics will be David Inge's guest at 11 o'clock tomorrow on Focus 580. Coming up tomorrow in the 1 o'clock hour of the afternoon magazine, we'll talk about Helen Gurley Brown. When reviewing the great figures of feminism, few would call to mind the creator of the Cosmo Girl. But as scholar Jennifer Scanlon argues in her fascinating biography, Bad Girls Go Everywhere, The Life of Helen Gurley Brown, the longtime editor of Cosmopolitan and diva of the New York magazine world, powerfully changed the way modern culture views the single woman. Jennifer Scanlon will be our guest tomorrow following the 1 o'clock news.
Earth and Sky.
So we stand to lose perhaps the most magnificent environmental or ecological resource that the United States has.
You're listening to Upmanu Lal, director of the Columbia Water Center at Columbia University. He's speaking about the Florida Everglades, North America's largest wetland.
Essentially, we have a competition between human use, manifest as agriculture in the area, and the drinking water supply for the 6 million people that live there, and the simultaneous ability to sustain and nurture the ecosystem, which we have societally decided is important to us.
Human activity around the Everglades, which is essentially a shallow and wide river, has caused the wetlands to shrink and species to disappear. Dr. Lal is